Hi, Petri Pals. Welcome back to the Mel Kay Show. As all you know, there's a lawyer out there that is fighting for truth and justice and pushing the truth out every way he can. He is one of the men standing on the front lines of this American Revolution 2.0. And I'm honored to have him here today. Mr. Thomas Rentz is with me again.
Hey, nice to see you, Mel. You know, that we're up to more than one now, right? We found like there's like two or three lawyers that have ethics now. We're
fine. You're attracting
ethics.
Them.
Who to thunk it?
Yeah, you know, and a lot of you guys are have suffered a lot of slings and arrows to keep going and put your lives, your livelihoods, your reputations, because fighting for good is not always a straight and narrow path.
It does not endear me to the bad guys that we're fighting. And, you know, the bad guys don't have any qualms about playing dirty. So,
yeah,
it's the nature of fighting bad guys, though.
Right. Well, that's the problem is that our people that are fight that believe in God and country, the Constitution, truth, law and order, they are fighting a unlimited finance machine on the other side that would like to throw our Constitution, Bill of Rights and our Judeo-Christian values in the toilet and take over all of our everything that we value in America. So first things first, you are fighting on a lot of fronts from the COVID disinformation to the mandates. So why don't you just give my audience an update on what is going on and how they can help also and get involved. And I think we should start there.
All right. So, I mean, we're still suing everyone over everything and working on more lawsuits so that we can sue more people over more. I mean, that's
right.
What we do.
Right.
I don't like chasing ambulances. So I guess I chase crooked politicians and other such things. So
right.
You got to chase something. That's part of the lawyer training, right? You know, they go to law school and they teach you how to chase things, whether it's an ambulance or something else. So we're doing that. You know, all the cases, they're moving. It's slow and methodical, and it is what it is. It takes a long time. It's challenging. Now, I'm gonna blow your hat off here for a second. So let me tell you about a real issue that we're facing. Get ready. Implicit bias. Wait. Has Rem's gone woke? No. Well, here's the thing. So it's an interesting thing, you know. We're facing a lot of implicit bias. So I've decided to hijack the left's word, right?
Okay.
I'm sure someone's going to be triggered. This is my woke interview of the day.
Great.
I'm going to trigger a whole bunch of leftists. So implicit bias is a legitimate concept, right? So implicit bias is the idea that you've been conditioned to view things in a certain way, mm-hmm. and that, you know, that affects your subconscious. So what we're dealing with, and one of the obstacles that we're dealing with, and something that we're working on addressing, and we've known it's there, but is implicit bias. Now, let me give you an example. Let's say, for example, you've got a judge who's in that at-risk category, who is working for the federal government. And I'm not pointing to any particular person, but I'm just giving it as an example. Let's say you got some, you know, 70-year-old judge, 80-year-old judge, you know, 65, whatever.
Right.
And working as a federal judge, and for decades, you know, they get their information. They trust the federal government. The federal government offers you an opinion, and you can take what's called judicial notice of it. And judicial notice means you don't have to do anything. We can all agree it's from the government. They're not biased. They're not corrupt. It's just the science, right? Okay. So that's been the approach that you've taken for decades, because typically that's a legitimate thing. You can, in many cases, trust what the government has to say, maybe, okay. Up until recently. Well, recently, as we all know, that is no longer the case. I mean, at this point, if it's coming from the government, first thing you need to do is question it.
Right.
And I believe our founding fathers had some opinions on that, but that's another story. So anyways, but these judges, you know, the courts, and in our medical system, you know, the medical system too, our doctors, you know, they've got this belief and this foundational belief you can trust the government. So one of the things that we're fighting everywhere is this implicit bias, because there's a tendency to just take what they're saying as true.
Right.
Well, these same people are telling everybody, hey, you're going to die if you don't get this vaccine, and everybody's dying from COVID, and it's the worst thing ever. And this, they've been telling it for 2 years, and they scared most of the American public. They've also scared a lot of our decision makers. I've got some documents that were given to me, and this is the first time I'm talking about it, but I actually have some documents from the federal courts that went out to employees, you know, pushing these vaccines and pushing these things. And so the question is, and I'm not accusing anyone of anything, right?
Right.
But what I'm suggesting is that we as attorneys should consider, and we in the legal profession in general need to consider, are we dealing with implicit bias? If you're an attorney, are you so scared because of the 2 years of garbage that you're not willing to look at real evidence? Because here's the problem. For 2 years, I've been digging for real evidence. And I've found the real evidence, yes. Okay? But a lot of people are having a hard time seeing it because it runs counter to the fear that they've been. Yeah, I think Malone talked a little bit about it. Yeah, he talked about it kind of as a mass hypnosis or so. I don't know. I'm not a doctor. So I'm not getting into that side of it. But what I can tell you is it certainly qualifies as implicit bias. And we need to be woke to that bias.
Right.
And we need to start doing, you know, I looked, NIH actually defines implicit bias. And they talked about what we can do about it. So we got to do what NIH says. NIH says we got to confront implicit bias by talking about it. So here's my thing. We legal professionals need to now have a talk about our implicit bias regarding COVID.
Right.
Everybody thinks it's killing you, but guess what? You're discriminating against this poor underserved group of anti-vaxxers who are now getting beat up, including myself, all the time. And you guys have the power dynamic. So I'm just taking the whole left argument and I'm applying it. You guys, I think I need reparations.
You will need reparations. Right. But I mean, it's that crazy. I mean, I know what he's talking about because I have a lot of, I have a good friend that's an MK Ultra survivor and has testified about and was part of shutting down the project, even though they just changed the name and kept going, as we know. But at the time when it was really bad in the 80s and 70s and 80s. But I will say we have that going on in general because all the evidence that you brought out, and you were on the front lines, you got that evidence from the Medicaid, Medicare, which apparently, as you said, you know, stopped. I mean, that now that I don't even know if you can still get that, but what you got was enough that it should have opened eyes and it still didn't. And now we're seeing this VARS data that we know is such, it's the tip of the iceberg, 21,000 deaths, millions of adverse reactions. Hello, we had a vaccine earlier in history that had 86 deaths and it was pulled. So, you know, this is, keeps going. And I mean, that's the real issue here is people are dying and nobody, and they're not this implicit bias, which is deep. You know, it's that thing, Mark Twain said, it's easier to con somebody than convince them they've been conned. Well, we have a whole lot of people out there that in the back of their minds, they're thinking this is weird, or, you know, I've had both shots and the vaccine and I have COVID and now I have to go to the hospital after all of that to get some other treatment. And it's just, but they're not putting together the dots still, no matter what's shown. It's not just the judges. It's the people. And then, you know, CNN, MSNBC, and all of the deep state accomplices in this propaganda, they use all this neuralistic programming. You talk about implicit bias. They're just shoving it into people's heads without them seeing it. So, you know, what, there is evidence. You have it. You've shown it. And where are we now?
Yeah, and I got more. We just had something in today, actually. I haven't had a chance to evaluate it yet. It just came in today, so I don't really even know what all it says, but it looks pretty compelling. And this is actually from a different source, so I'm interested to see what it says. But, you know, well, first of all, I kind of get a boot out of the fact, anybody tuning in to watch the Mel Kay show with an interview with Renz, and you're talking about wokeism and implicit bias, but, you know, check your bias. I know it's check your privilege, but, you know, check your bias. We want people to check. I think that should be hashtag on Twitter. Check your bias. We need to have that. Check your bias. You know, with COVID-19. And that's the key, though, right, is we've got to overcome that. So in the courts, that's a challenge. In public opinion, that's a challenge. But that's what we're facing. We know that. And that's right. What we're doing. And we're doing, it's going as expected. You know, it's a fight, but we'll get there. And right. I feel like that we're making progress. I mean, we had great rulings on the SEALs, on Head Start. Right. We had a little hiccup on the OSHA thing. We'll see what the Supreme Court does. This is going to be a monumentally important decision. Yeah. So, you know, we got to see what happens there. But I'm hoping that we can get somewhere with this in the Supreme Court. If they shut it down there, that'll have a big impact.
Oh yeah.
And if they don't, you know, we got to ask ourselves what's going on here. But we're going to be challenging the premise of this, and we will continue challenging the premise of this until it's won. So.
Right. Yeah. Now I know that. Are you familiar with the International Criminal Court complaint that was filed? Nope. Why can't we do that?
So here's the thing about the International Criminal Court. The International Criminal Court is a coalition of the willing, essentially. I like the idea of an International Criminal Court if you can make sure, first of all, that it's not corrupt, and second of all, that it's, you know, truly just. So the International Criminal Court, first of all, the United States is not a participant in it.
Oh, okay.
So they don't have jurisdiction here. They can't do anything here. A lot of the countries that do have participated, you know, I mean, are places where there's people who can and should be arrested.
Right.
And I hope they'll do that. Typically, if I'm not mistaken, and I haven't looked at this recently, but it used to be that I believe you had to be, if you wanted to bring a charge or you wanted to fight, it had to be brought by a nation or some major thing. So private citizens typically didn't have standing to bring something before the court. So, I think it's unlikely that they're going to do much with it, but I think it's important that that the complaint was brought forward because this is absolutely a crime against humanity. That's all going to come out. That's all going to come out. And I think that the other side is starting to realize that their days are numbered on this. That's why, have you seen Florona? Have you seen this?
Yes, I have.
You know what this is, Mel? So let me tell you about this. This is exactly, so I've been saying this for a while. They did it a little bit differently than what I said.
Right.
But I was talking about how this whole COVID thing, because they're going to lose. They know they're going to lose.
Right. I agree. They're changing the narrative already, and they're not all agreeing anymore.
No. Well, so what they're going to do is they're saying Florona so that you can get your flu vaccine. So the money in this, and you always follow the money.
Right.
There are hundreds of billions of dollars invested globally on gene therapy. Gene therapy is where they want to go with this. They want to change your humanity. They want to edit your genes. They want control of your genome.
Right.
So what they're doing right now is they're trying to move into this gene therapy. Well, they've already said that we're going to start introducing mRNA and other gene therapies into the flu vaccine.
Right.
So next year, when you get your flu jab, you're going to be getting an mRNA experimental jab that's going to probably be just as dangerous as the COVID vax.
Right.
They're going to change the name. They're going to drop the COVID vax and say, oops. You know, or they're going to try and say COVID's just not as big of a deal anymore.
Right.
But the reality is that nothing's really changed other than the fact that they're changing the name on the vaccine. And there's fewer legal issues with it being a flu vaccine than a COVID vaccine. So they're just going to try and shift it. That's all they're doing.
Right.
But it's the same garbage put into a needle and, you know, jabbed into you that still changes your genome. It still alters who you are. And by the way, let's just put to rest that these vaccines are anything but a gene therapy. The CDC changed the definition of vaccines so that gene therapies could be included. Pfizer and Moderna have documents out there talking about their vaccines, which aren't vaccines, their gene therapies being gene therapies. The CEO of Bayer was just out talking about these gene therapies. Yeah, it's just what it is,
yeah.
You know, and the great thing about the gene therapy is it's worked so well that they just had that story came out of Indiana that we have a 40% increase in deaths and it has nothing to do with COVID.
Yeah, but they're not, they stop right short of saying that it has to do with things that happened because of the injection. So they say it's not COVID, but they're not really, I mean, the guy who came out with it is saying it. But when he gets to the press and then is manipulated by the Mockingbird, you know, controlled media, they don't go the next step. and say these people are dying of all the things that were put as side effects way back when to the vaccine. So yeah. it's still like not telling the full truth to inform the public of the dangers.
Well, they're never gonna. I mean, the press is owned by the left or by the pharma. I mean,
bigger than that. I mean, it's ridiculous.
I mean, they absolutely own it. So, I mean, the only way this word gets out is because of people like you who are out there, you know, having the courage to, you know, put us out there, even though you, you know, have to deal with all the garbage from it.
Well, it's okay. I get to hang around with people like you, so it's worth it. But I'll tell you right now, here's the other thing that we talked about once. The PCR test, the guy who created it, Mullis, said it doesn't work for this. Fauci's full of crap. You know, this and that. He dies mysteriously, like all the scientists that ever go against the NIH and all these people and CDC. Then, so then in July, they say, the CDC says the PCR test is a higher false positive and that it shouldn't be used anymore come December 31st. Well, there are people lined up, people that are completely gone, that are wearing two masks and a shield because of Omicron in New York City for 3 hours waiting to get a test. And I go up and I ask, and it's the same test they've been giving. So that's the PCR test. But wasn't it supposed to be not used anymore as of the 31st?
Yeah, it doesn't work. But we've been saying this for 2 years.
I know.
I mean, you know, this is something, you know, we've got it in courts. We've got it all over the place, you know. And this is what I talk about, implicit bias in the courts.
Right.
You know, I mean, you got to get the judges. You put this as evidence and the judge says, well, I'm not so sure that's plausible. Well, here's a newsflash for you. It's not only plausible, we can prove it.
Right, right. And it's on their website. This is the craziest part. And you know what else I've noticed, Tom, and I keep telling people to pay attention. People are starting to use Corona instead of COVID suddenly. Reporters and articles and, you know, of the left, of the propaganda, of the Gates and big pharma owned media, they're starting to use Corona again. Coronavirus is the common cold as well. You know, this is a group of viruses that there's no cure for the common cold or the flu. There will never be one for whatever COVID is. But now I see that they're starting to go back and just stop using the word COVID. I mean, it's like this mental, can you talk a little bit about this switching of the language? And how dangerous this is?
Oh, they've been doing that from the beginning, you know, changing the definition, changing this, changing that, you know, just anything to deceive the public they can. Now, I'll tell you, I just got word a day or two ago from a doctor friend of mine was looking at some of the newer PCR tests.
Right.
And those tests check for coronavirus, and the coronavirus that they check for is actually the common cold. So good luck not being positive.
Right. Right? Well, it's so interesting you say that because my friend's son, so New York City public schools, listen, New York to me is their golden goose of taking down America. Everything's happening here first. And I want to ask you about something else in New York in a second that's not totally related to this, but all the school kids are getting sent home now home tests. So I asked my friend, look at who the home test is. And it's like a name like Axum Labs or whatever. You trace it. If you're not me, you trace it. And it said it's from San Diego. But then I go deeper and I say, who finances it? Boom, boom, boom. It comes from the CCP China, a lab in China. And the New York City public schools are sending it out. Meanwhile, it's very complicated. And at the end of the day, then you have to self-report. So what I'm looking into it. And I think it's exactly what you're saying. I think these tests are testing the common cold. There's no protocol on it of what they're testing.
Well, you got to understand that one of the things, so we found information data that's really, I mean, we know they're selling the DNA information.
Right. I mean,
we know that it's public. It's public knowledge. They're selling your genetic information.
Right.
That's part of it. And China's been collecting it. I mean, we don't know who all's collecting it. We can't tell for sure what they're collecting it for, but there's no question that the testing really is as much about getting your DNA.
Oh yeah.
As it is anything else, which makes sense. I mean, if you have hundreds of billions of dollars being invested into gene therapy, what do you want? Well, you want as much data and information on DNA as you could possibly have.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I'm not a doctor. I can't you know, go into or explain all the details about why you would want that. What I know is if China wants my DNA, I'm quite sure I don't want them to have it, because I trust China about as far as I trust Anthony Fauci.
Right. Well, they're all in cahoots. Yeah. Speaking of that, we saw a Dr. Lieber that I've really dug into his patents and his stuff. He was getting millions of dollars from our government, but also millions of dollars from Jeffrey Epstein and Bill Gates and their friends. Also took money from Wuhan and from CCP military to start a nanotechnology lab in Wuhan, right near the Wuhan lab where the virus was created with gain of function research. He's found guilty. They're acting like it's about tax evasion. But if you really look, this connects to what you're saying, because there was a group of scientists all getting money from Jeffrey Epstein, all involved in pictures with him and everywhere. You know, he considered himself a science philanthropist, but really he was a transhumanist and a eugenicist. And all of the friends of Lieber that got money from him from MIT and Harvard, also doing a lot of work with China, but also what you're saying, the Human Genome Project, one guy that's an Epstein beneficiary, Church, Novak, Minsky, AI, virtual reality, they're all in the same team. They're all getting money from the Epstein Foundation and the Gates Foundation through MIT, which actually apparently owns Moderna or is a partner in Moderna. Moderna's first vaccine ever is this vaccine, which is not a vaccine. But what you're saying, all of that. So this Lieber case, this is something I wanted to ask you about, because I saw it with the Maxwell case too. They do these cases, you know, where we know that our government, I'm positive from my research that Maxwell, certainly Epstein, was an asset of U.S. intelligence at some level. It's even in the first pleading. Then we have, you know, Lieber, who's gotten tons of grants from the NIH, from NIAID, from DARPA, from the Department of Defense. He's all caught into that. These people aren't being charged with the actual crimes that they committed that we, the people, should be concerned about. They're being charged with other crimes. And then it's like, okay, that's it. At what point do we, the people, have to realize these are show trials? I mean, we should know, this should be more transparent.
Yeah, well, I mean, clearly you're just a conspiracy theorist. I don't know what to tell you. No. Well, you know, I mean, in light of the fact that it's January 6th, let's talk about the guy who runs the crew that, you know, did the violence down in D.C. on January 6th.
Right. Not even that's charged.
That's not being charged. I mean, he led the group.
I know.
You know, he's in charge, and his lieutenants. So, you know, listen, there appears, and I can't prove this, okay? And I'm always careful to say what I can and can't prove.
Right.
It appears that there are active cells in the United States, whether they're government, whether they're quasi-government, whether they're, you know, just spies from other countries. I don't know. There's bad guys here working against us.
Right.
Don't know for sure who they are. Can't prove who they are, but I can certainly see the results.
Right.
And, you know, for me, being a simple guy, you know, I just kind of look for bad guys, and I don't, you know, I don't really know or care. I'm just going to stomp them out to the best of my ability. And that's what we're doing, you know, and we try and be clever about it, but I don't have the evidence yet to show all of the connections. Now, I will tell you that when we talk about Lieber and we talk about the nanotech and some of that stuff, man, I've got some crazy stuff on that, crazy stuff that I don't talk about in public because it's crazy.
I know.
Except for I've got evidence.
I know. You know? I just started talking about it because I went through his patents.
Yeah.
And you can't possibly go through his patents. I had a scientist on that actually understands this stuff and not realize that it's got to all be connected. But until we can connect it legitimately. But again, it does seem to me what I keep saying to people, because there's no good guys, the DOJ, they're all against us, this and that. It's impossible that that's true, or we wouldn't know any of this. My thing watching the whole thing, because it was the Elizabeth Holmes case. She's all involved with that blood processing false thing, collecting blood, by the way. We got the Maxwell, which is really about a blackmail ring. And we got Lieber that is obviously connected to whatever just happened in Wuhan with a bio, you know, whatever they're doing there. And it's like all these little pieces. But like you said, they're all compartmentalized. And once you try to connect the dots, then you're a conspiracy theorist. I say I'm a conspiracy factor, but at the end of the day, they keep it this way. This is why I think they do these things in pieces. I mean, I'm still at a place where I still want to know what is on Anthony Weiner's laptop as an American citizen and taxpayer in New York. I paid for that whole case. So I would like to know what crimes against humanity and stuff they have in their insurance file with Podesta and Hillary implicated. But we never get there. We never get there, which takes me to the next thing I want to ask you about. Okay, so here we're at a place where a lot of people are being sued that did nothing on January 6th. They weren't even there, like Bernie Kerik, Mark Meadows, Bannon, Stone, Flynn. We have friends being sued by the machine people that count the votes
Dominion. That
have nothing to do with it, have never been involved. And it's really sad because people have to understand there's a lawfare for good and lawfare for bad, but the people that are doing these giant cases, not only do they have the attention of the media, who wants a case is filed by the nefarious side, run with it like the people are guilty already. Some people we know, and we know it full on, have nothing to do with anything and should not be being sued, but they also have unlimited money, and I'm watching people that I know and love and care about and know are true patriots fighting for good and justice and truth in our country. And yet once lawfare starts, they have to get defense attorneys for big retainers. They have to prove something that they didn't do in the first place, that they didn't do it. And then the big thing you and I have talked about many times, and I want you to kind of explain, is they never get to discovery ever. So can you just talk a little bit about lawfare, the good, the bad, and the damage it does to innocent people?
Yeah, so lawfare is really important, and we use it. I mean, right? I've talked about this. You know, you got one little nobody from Fremont, Ohio, you know, fighting all these bad guys. How are you going to do it? Lawfare, right? Right. Now, here's the thing, though. Under the rules of ethics for an attorney, you are not allowed to file a case unless you have a good faith belief that it's a legitimate thing. You can't file illegitimate cases, and you shouldn't.
Right.
Every case that I've ever filed, I believe in 100%. Yeah. I wouldn't do it otherwise, you know. But here's the thing. Ultimately, there is a different there's a different standard, right? Okay, so there's, if you believe in what you're doing and you're doing it for the right reasons and you sue someone, and they're doing something wrong, you may call it lawfare, but what it actually is just it's a lawsuit. And then when we use lawfare, we talk about the fact that we also bring the publicity, we bring the political pressure, we bring all these different things that go with that. Here's the difference between what we do and what the other side does. The other side brings lawsuits, and they don't bring them in good faith. They bring them in without it being in good faith. And I can't give any specific examples because I could get in trouble.
Right, that's okay.
But they bring them in bad faith. And then they do it, even though it's in bad faith, knowing that they have enough lawyers who are smart enough to twist the facts enough just run the bill up. Right.
Now, run the bill up. And they have unlimited money. Right.
I could sue Pfizer from now until the cows come home, and I can't out. There's no money on this planet that I could use that would, you know, it's not like they're going to run out of money for lawyers.
Right.
It's not an effective strategy to try and outspend them on lawyering.
Right.
So when we do it, we use it in a little bit different tactic. When you use it to try and outspend the other side, which is what because we're the little guys. So here's more leftist, right? The power dynamic. We don't have the power. They do have the power. So they try and outspend these smaller groups, these individuals, these billionaires fund these cases.
I know.
And they try and outspend these people who are private citizens. And they try and, you know, basically bankrupt them with legal fees and other such things. So it's really a nefarious thing. You know, and what the interesting thing. So, you know, one of the things you brought the Dominion suits, and I think that's an interesting thing, right? So I have not done much with election stuff, although I'm just starting to look at some of it, and I found some interesting things. But, You know, I can't say whether Dominion did anything bad or not. I don't have any evidence of it either way, just because I haven't looked at it, right?
Right.
What I can tell you, though, is there's a lot of people that believe Dominion did do something bad. You know, there's been allegations that their software is, I don't know, something. I don't know, change votes or something. I don't know exactly what even all they've said.
Right.
But so there's these allegations. There's allegations that some of their... I think I've heard someone say that there's allegations of them being able to connect to the internet.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, these are, yeah, this is what's being said, but at the right. same time, people are just saying it. And then they're coming. People have to understand Lord Moloch Brown, who works for Soros,
right.
is behind Smartmatic and the other machines. So they have okay. unlimited money. But the problem yeah. is people are just mentioning it and getting slammed with hundreds of millions of dollars lawsuits. This is yeah. insane. This
well, here's really the thing, sick. Right? So there's a real simple solution. If someone's saying, "Hey, your computer, your voting machine connected to the internet, and you've got a router in there," that's real simple. Just open it up and show me there's none.
Well, they won't do that.
Why not?
Because Jovan Pulitzer proved it a year ago.
But that's the discovery that they've got to get to. And one of the things that I think is really curious to me as an attorney is when you bring these, if you're bringing it in good faith, you have to know that at some point you're going to get to discovery. And well, you know, if I'm running discovery on a case like this, truth is always a defense to a defamation type action, right? If I'm telling the truth, I'm not defaming.
Right.
And so by bringing these suits, it's a really interesting thing because yes, they're forcing people to spend money on lawyers, but if they're lying, you know, that should come out in discovery unless they've got a way to cover it up. And I don't know, but what I do know is that, you know, the strategy here, it just is bizarre to me.
Counting on public opinion. And then they feel like once they get past, if the puppet masters, I call them, because they're above the installed regime, in my opinion, in DC, they feel like, I believe if they can cheat and get past 2022, then they put in HR1 and it doesn't really matter anymore. And all the suits go away and everyone's shut up and we're put in the gulag. I mean, it seems to me like it's more a game of playing out time. And keeping it going. But what you said is the most important thing, I think, is they push off discovery as long as possible. And discovery is where the truth comes. And they have enough money to keep filing things over, like just to push it back and push it back.
Yeah.
There should really, I mean, we need reform in everything, obviously. I think DC, we got to go back to the states first. The states have to take back their sovereignty, get all these people out, you know, really weed out the people. I mean, at this point, if people don't understand that George Soros has many, many times said that his goal in life is to destroy America from the inside out and replace the world power with China because they have a compliant public. But whatever the case may be, we're watching what's going on in all these cities. And for you as a lawyer and somebody who believes in law and order and the Constitution, we're having something really terrible happen. And it just got real, real bad in New York. But we have all these DAs and people coming into these offices. All you can trace them all to George Soros and his funding and his also his other group, the Dark Money 1630 Project or whatever it's called. But here's the deal. This is my question for you. So we're at a place where we have now a new DA in New York City that says he's not going to put anyone in jail or allow people to prosecute any crimes that require jail time. Unless it's a homicide, or of course he's keeping over egregious civil, you know, corruption, so that just in case New York gets something on Trump, they can use it. But he's not going to put anyone in jail anymore. I would say that that's a violation of that office. What is going on here?
I mean, I'd say there's a lot of violations there. I can't, you know, your job as a prosecutor is not to essentially make the law, which is what you're doing if you're not enforcing it.
Right.
Your job is simply to enforce it, right? If you take the job of prosecutor whose entire purpose is to enforce the law, and you choose what laws you're going to enforce and which ones you're not, I mean, how can you define that other than a dereliction of duty? I mean, that's It's unethical. Right. It's illegal. It's an anathema to what it means to be an attorney. I mean, you're taking, as an attorney, you have an ethical obligation to serve your clients. Well, your clients are the people of New York in this case.
Right.
And so you've been hired to put people in jail who are bad guys.
Right.
And you're saying that I'm not going to do that? I mean, I think that, I would think there'd be an ethics charge there or 10.
Yeah.
I would think that the guy should be, even talking like that, should be fired immediately and investigated. That's my opinion. But yeah. I mean, that's not just unethical. It's dangerous. I mean,
look that's what I was going to say. They're making, they're putting in people California. In danger.
Look what's happened in California, but the people in New York, they're going to have to stand up. They've got to stand up. You can't just, and it can't be a few of you. It's New York City. You don't have a million people marching in the streets when it's this bad. There's something wrong.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And listen, the new mayor, I've warned everyone, but you know what? Something's so corrupt in New York that on the right, on the conservative, they never run anyone that can win here. It's like the rhinos that are running against these hardcore socialist Democrat New Yorker, whatever they are, these pro crime, pro all of that. They don't they never put in a candidate that can compete. I've watched it over 20 years. It's very bizarre since Bloomberg, at least. But here's another thing. So sorry to talk about New York, but it's not just going on here. So we have an unelected governor that we thought was, couldn't imagine could be worse than Cuomo, and she is. But so here's another thing. I'm very upset about it, but it's hard to believe that it's real. She's declared a state of emergency in New York, calling racism a health crisis, and is going to be wielding her executive powers like Cuomo did under the health crisis known as COVID into racism. First of all, I will say New York City is the least racist city probably on the planet. And everyone gets a fair shake here, and it's not an easy city for anyone. But on top of that, since when is racism a health issue? And two, a state of emergency giving her these powers based on racism? And then on top of that, Tom, she is saying out loud that she is going to prioritize treatment, care, antibodies, testing for minorities over white people. How is any of this allowed? What is going on here?
It's not. It's illegal. I mean, it's just straight up illegal. But here's the problem. If we the people don't stand up and say no, then it's like Joe Biden. He keeps breaking the law. He knows he's breaking the law.
Right.
But unless we do something about it, he's going to keep breaking the law. We've got people in Washington and in New York who they don't care about the law.
They don't.
I mean, it's just that simple. So we either do something about it or you live with it.
Well, and
I got to tell you, Mel, I have got to tell you, for 2 years now, I haven't slept. I mean, you've seen me, we've been around, we've done stuff. I just work.
I know.
For 2 years, I have fought with every fiber of my being to get freedom in this country.
I know.
And I'm going to keep fighting and we're going to win it. But I can't, at this point, think of anything more irritating to me than I don't like it, but I just can't do anything. Oh, my God. Get your lazy butt off the couch. Don't tell me you're tired and do something. OK,
right.
If you go to rensdashlaw.com and you share the information on COVID, you're doing something.
Right.
If you go to, if you join Make Americans Free Again, you're doing something.
Right.
If you support, I don't care, pick your group, Stand for Health Freedom. If you, maybe you're into the election stuff, maybe you're supporting Lindell. I don't care what you're doing, but democracy, the Democratic Republic that we have, the constitutional republic that we have, requires our participation. You got to get your butt up and do something. And sitting around the kitchen table saying the same thing, kvetching about the same stuff to the same people without ever doing anything more is not doing something.
Right. And you know, it's funny. I wonder if you feel this way, but as I watch people that are stepping up and stepping out and going out there and putting themselves, because the other side is a machine. Like you said, you're going to fight these battles, but you don't have unlimited money. You don't have that the big giant law firms that have been, you know, go back to the firm times where the blue blood law firms that never run out of money and are all corrupt. You don't have that. You're the little guy fighting the big guy. And I believe you will win regardless of that because truth and God are on your side. But at the same time, I want to ask you this because some of the people I know, I have a friend that's now stepped out. He's running for sheriff. He was in the military. I have a couple of friends that we both know running for governor or congresspeople that never were in politics, which is really where we should be looking, is to people that have been stellar in the community or business, have integrity, have proven that they are constitutional and you know, for God and country. But what I'm seeing, though, is people that, because, you know, growing up, I was like, why would anyone go from their day job to city council or, you know, from their day job to the community board or to the, you know, school board or anything? Now we know a lot of them didn't. They were put there on purpose. But for the good guys that want to come in, it appears that once you get involved, something else takes over, and that you no longer feel that way. You become engaged in the fight. So since you jumped in, I feel like you can't stop. Something else took over.
No, and you can't. And the reason I think it is that when you start doing good,
yeah,
you start feeling good about what you're doing.
Right.
And it becomes a very addictive thing. You know, I feel pretty, at the end of the day, I can tell my little kids, what are you doing, Dad? I'm fighting bad guys. And that's a pretty awesome thing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an amazing thing. Listen, I'm doing my little part. Is it changing the world? No, but I'm trying and I'm giving everything I got towards it. And at the end of the day, what did your daddy do? Well, he did his very best to fight bad guys. And that's awesome.
Right.
You know, if you want to be, you know, listen, maybe be a precinct captain.
Right.
Or volunteer for the voting. Go out and just share information with people who don't like what you have to say. Don't be rude about it, but share the information. Say, listen, hey, I know you don't agree with me, but I'm just sharing this with you. I thought you might want to know or get some perspective, you know, and that's all impactful. If you're an artist, make some art.
Right.
If you're a musician, make some music. If you're a writer, write something. If you're a communicator, communicate. I don't care what you do, do something.
Right.
That's it. And, you know, here's the thing. And Mel, I've said this to you before, and you know, I mean it from the heart. I'm not important. You don't have to be important. I'm making a difference. I am.
Wow.
I recognize that I'm making a difference. Maybe not to everybody, but to some people.
True.
It's not because I'm a hero or a big shot or a, you know, world renowned. It's because I'm fighting. I can't say that enough. You don't have to be a hero to fight. You just have to be willing. And you have to be relentless and you have to keep fighting. And it doesn't matter what they say to you. You have to keep fighting for your God, for your family, for your country. You have to keep fighting. And that's what I'm looking for people to do. It doesn't matter how you fight, as long as it's ethical, legal, and peaceful.
Right.
Fight.
Yep.
Fight. It doesn't matter how, it doesn't matter what your thing is. Just do something. You know, but for Selma, back in the civil rights era,
right,
we may still have segregation.
Right. True story.
But for a few heroic people over the decades, over the centuries, over the millennia, that have taken a stand and said, you know what, I'm not going to the back of the bus.
Right.
It's wrong, it's immoral, and I'm not doing it. But for the people that had the courage to do that, we have a much worse world than we have right now. But those people, those heroes, they stood up, and that's what we need right now, is we need people willing to stand up. You don't have to be the best or the brightest. You don't have to be powerful. You don't have to be rich. You have to be relentless, fearless, and unconditional in your desire to achieve your goal.
That is the absolute truth, and that is why I love Tom Renz. And at the same time, you know, you really are leading by example. And I know you're one of the most humble people. you won't even listen to it, but you are making a difference and you're inspiring so many people. And I hope more people join you. I know lawyers are reaching out. They want to get involved. They want to help out. And we need more of that. There's a lot of lawyers out there that went There's a lot of people who never became lawyers after they passed the bar and got into the field and said, this is not for me. That can make a difference now and help out as well. Again, you're at Wren's Law. Can you just tell everyone real quick? I'll put all the links below. Please, please go to his website. There's so much valuable information to be shared. It's called Proof and Facts, and you can find them on his website. Please go visit there now. Tom, please tell them where to go.
Okay, so I need you to go to wrens-law.com. It's R-E-N-Z-law.com. Go to wrens-law.com, share the information. I don't care if you do nothing else. The first thing I ask people to do is to pray. Pray for us, pray for our fight, pray for what we're doing. And the second thing I ask you to do is to at least go to the website, wrens-law.com, and share the information. Share it everywhere. And if you want to and you're inclined to, you can support us. We got our charity is forgodfamilycountry.org written out. You can support us there. But please, forgodfamilycountry.org, wrens-law.com, share the information, take a stand. First of all, pray. But then please, anything that you can do to help us in this fight, and that doesn't mean what you can do to give me something. I don't care if I never hear, I don't get a dime from you sharing stuff. I just get to know that that information's out there, and that helps me to continue to build our movement. So please, please, please be active, share this. We got a wonderful letter up there calling for criminal investigations. If you sign that, we're making use of that. Yep. Just support us how you can.
Yeah. And please guys, listen, we're fighting a monster on the other side, a big monster. And every single one of us can do our part. And even if that means sharing the stuff, getting involved, do your part, because you want to be on the right side. And we are, you know, I believe God fully wins here. God won already in my mind, but just like in the Bible, we got to be on the front lines. And we got to win the battle, and we're going to. And thank you so much, Tom Wrens. You're a hero of mine, whether you want to be so or not. And I will see you in Arizona as we keep fighting the fight and meeting the people in real life and encouraging them to go back to their local communities and have the strength and courage and be resolute in fighting this battle, because we know what's going to happen in the end. Truth will prevail. But in the meantime, we got to be relentless in our war against terror, honestly, tyranny. Thank you so much, Tom. I'll see you next time.
Thanks, Mel. You have an awesome day, and thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.